9. On Fillmore Street, the neon signs of bars and shops put on color haphazardly for Saturday night. Their arrangement had been built up over the years by businessmen. Spots of gum on the pavement formed dark circles near the entrance of a movie theater, a bowling alley, the illuminated door of a coffee shop. As late as this, a flow of persons, white and Negro and Mexican, passed the shops. In doorways, figures had left the flow and were by themselves. They were mostly boys. They wore black leather jackets and jeans, and for the most part, they were surprisingly lean. They stood with their thumbs hooked in their back pockets. They twisted to follow elements within the flow, as if they had some special interest. At the popping of an exhaust, they raised their heads. They listened. Their mouths opened. They caught signals. Then they looked back at the individuals and made judgments about them. Spectators, they saw everyone and had an opinion. In the middle of the block, Jim located the house set back from the pavement, the fence and iron gate. "That's it," he said. "Maybe they're not up," Pat said. He was able to park near the house. Together, he and Pat walked up the sidewalk. He opened the gate and they passed on in, to darkness and the sudden loss of street sounds. The cement path was ahead, but neither of them could see it. Reaching, he took Pat's hands. Her fingers were cold, and he enclosed them. To the right of the porch, the basement window showed a rim of light. "They're awake," he said. "It's so late," Pat said. She stumbled, and a metal object rolled away, a tin can that glinted and then vanished into weeds. He went down the steps, leaving her behind him. Against the streetlight, she was slim and small, buried within her coat. Her head was up, and she walked in a circle, her heels making sharp, staccato clicks on the cement. He knocked on the door. The door opened and light flooded out. Rachel recognized him and said, "Oh, hello." Backing away from him and holding the door open, she said, "We were playing cards." He said to her, "This is in the nature of a favor. I have somebody with me and she isn't feeling well. We thought maybe we could drop by for a while. Were you just about to go to bed?" "No," she said. She seemed to accept the situation. "Come on in." Going back for Pat, he led her down the steps and into the apartment. "This was a sort of inspiration. You can throw us out any time." Cards and poker chips were scattered across the top of the massive oak table. Something about the room had struck him as odd, and now he knew what it was. The walls were bare of pictures. "This is Patricia Gray," he said. He did not try to describe their relationship. He was not certain what he had said to them. "I think I've seen you at the station," Art said. He started to pull out his hand and then hid it in his pocket. Rachel said, "Can I fix you some coffee or something to eat?" She was standing close to Pat, and she had ducked in what seemed a survival of a curtsy. She wore a print dress, a bright summery frock, strapless. Her shoulders were bare. Her skin was fairer than Pat's. Her hair was much lighter and cut much shorter. Possibly she was smaller, but her expanded middle made it hard for him to tell. As he helped Pat off with her coat, she said, "It's warm in here. It's nice." "You bet," he said. "What huge, lovely eyes she has." Turning to Rachel, she said, "You make me want to take up painting again." During the first year of their marriage, she had cleaned a few brushes and made a few sketches, but nothing had been completed. The set of paints, as far as he knew, was now stored or thrown away. Certainly she had given up all pretensions along that line. Art hugged Rachel close to him. "She's going to have a baby." "Why, you're just a little doll," Pat said. "I can't get over her," she said to Jim.
"You're not only drunk," he said, "you're also queer."
"I mean it. I'd like to paint her sometime. Those eyes."
And then she moved off. Following her, he said, "What would help? Coffee?"
"Yes," she said.
He went with Rachel into the kitchen. "She's under a lot of strain," he said, as Rachel put the coffee pot on the burner and got down cups and saucers.
"She's high-strung, isn't she?" Rachel said. "I kind of like her."
"You're sweet to let us in," he said. "I'm grateful. We were out roaming around. It was no good."
"How long were you married?"
3 years, he said. I wanted to meet her. I'm glad you came. I know she means a great deal to you.
That's true, he said.
I can see why, Rachel said. She seemed shy and conscientious, concerned with doing what was right. She carried the coffee cups into the living room and began clearing the table.
What were you playing? He asked.
Blackjack.
She swept the deck of cards together and put it in its box.
One time we drove to Reno. We stayed there overnight. We played at the different tables.
Art said, She's a real cool poker player. She takes it real seriously. One time she knocked off Serta Hankey's glasses because he was fooling around. In his nervousness, he avoided looking at Jim and Pat. He grabbed up the poker chips and concentrated on them. He pretended that he was talking to no one in particular. Several times in his visits to Station KOIF, he had noticed Pat. He considered her beautiful. She reminded him of the women in fashion ads. The idea that such a woman would visit his house filled him with excitement. Only once had Rachel worn heels, and that was on the day they had gotten married. Glancing at Pat, he was aware of her dark hair and the intense color of her mouth. Makeup, he thought. He wondered how old she was. She was sitting by the table, and he was attracted to her legs. They seemed to him long and curved, and he wondered if she was a model. She was so well-dressed and beautiful that he went off into the other room and tried to think how he might improve himself. He examined one of his sport coats and a pair of slacks. When he re-entered the living room, Rachel offered him a cup of coffee. Jim Briskin was standing by the table holding a cup and saucer. His head brushed close to the ceiling of the room, and in such small quarters, he seemed especially tall. He wore a loose coat, his regular coat, and no tie. Art wondered how he could go around with Pat and not dress up. His own mind was filled with notions and schemes about clothes. Taking the coffee cup, he paced about with it. He was this close to such a woman, and at the same time he was farther away than ever. He had no idea what he might say to her. He was afraid to open his mouth. His own muteness offended him. Probably she would never come back, and he would never have this chance again. In agitation, he said to her, Hey, how long have you worked at the station?
Pat said, I don't know.
To Jim Briskin, she said,
When did I start?
Bending, she unfastened her high-heeled shoes and slid them off. She saw him looking at her, and she smiled.
How is it, working at a station?
Art said, as calmly as he could.
Pat said, It's noisy.
You want a month off? Jim Briskin said.
Sure, she said.
In her stocking feet, she went across the room to the radio.
Can I turn it up?
Dance music was playing. She made it louder. Not too loud, Jim Briskin said.
Is this too loud?
Remaining by the radio, she closed her eyes. Art thought she looked tired, but he did not know what he could do for her. He walked in her direction without any plan. Jim Briskin said, You better come sit down and drink your coffee.
It's excellent coffee, she said. Is there anything to drink? I don't feel like coffee.
You don't feel like drinking, Jim Briskin said.
I do.
She opened her eyes.
Not very much, just something.
Art said, There's some beer in the icebox. She paid no attention to him, and he went toward the kitchen.
I'll get you some.
Still looking at Jim Briskin, Pat said,
You want to dance with me?
You're in no state to dance.
Then you don't want to dance with me.
Come sit down. Jim Briskin reached out his hand toward her. What do you want to do, sit in my lap?
No.
As Art went into the kitchen, she was beginning to idle back and forth, a restless motion. Her hands were up, and she had shut her eyes again. His heart ached at the sight of such a pretty and tired woman in her stocking feet, swaying beside the radio, her hands empty. The feeling was familiar to him, the yearning without an object. She did not really want to dance. She wanted to not be still, to be in motion. She could not bring herself to sit down. Taking out the quart of beer, he poured a glassful and carried it into the living room. Here, he said. Pat shrank away.
What?
She said.
Oh, thanks. No, I don't want beer.
And his contact with her was broken. She
She was no longer aware of him. Gliding away, she hummed to herself, the tuneless, jangling release of pain.
"That's all we have around," Art said.
Now she returned. Her motion carried her back toward him. Her eyes opened, and she focused on him as if she were awakening.
"Will you dance with me?" she said. "Art, is that your name?"
Her hand came to rest on his shoulder, and her other hand was up, waiting to be grasped. Before he had time to make a decision, he had let her slip within his arm, and he had set down the glass of beer and was dancing with her. Her body was warm, and he could feel her backbone beneath his fingers. Her face, close to his, shone damply. Above her lips, tiny drops of perspiration glinted from the line of fuzz. It was a lovely fox-like face, new to him, and yet it was almost touching his. Now she turned her head, sighing, and then looked down. Her black hair tumbled forward, and strands of it swept along his cheek. On his shoulder, her hand rested heavily.
"You dance good," he said.
Suddenly she broke away.
"Don't you really have anything but beer? Did he tell you to say that?"
"You're turning paranoid," Jim Briskin said. "And sit down before you fall over." She directed a hard, calculated glance at him, and then she walked to the kitchen. Art followed her. In the kitchen, she had the icebox door open and was kneeling down, reaching in among the milk bottles.
"It's true," he said. "We don't usually..."
"I believe you," she said, straightening up beside him. "Do you know I'm drunk? I feel so..."
She shook her head.
"Not in a drain pipe anymore. That's something, at least. Maybe I feel romantic. Do I look okay?"
Lifting her hands, she smoothed her hair.
"You look fine, he said.
"Did she get pregnant on purpose? You're very lucky, you know, to have a little doll of a wife like that. Did you go around together in school?"
"Yes," he said. "We had classes together."
"God," Pat said. "You're only 18. And what's she, 16? When I was 16, I still thought babies were supplied by the hospital doctors. The woman just got large to make a place for it. Like kangaroos. Kids get older faster now. Why don't you go somewhere and get us a bottle?"
From the pocket of her skirt, she took out folded bills and handed them to him. She stuck them between his fingers.
"I saw a liquor store up the street. Get a fifth of rye or bourbon. No scotch. I've had enough scotch."
Humiliated, he said, "I can't buy liquor. This beer, some guys picked it up, you know? I mean, I can go into a grocery store. I know some of these grocers around here. In a bar, usually, they'll serve me. But at the liquor stores, they're real tough. They won't sell liquor to you if you're under 21. It was living death. He slunk in shame. He cringed. But she thought it was funny.
"You poor damn kid."
She reached up, and her arms folded about his neck. The pressure of her mouth slid in a trail across his face. He felt the moist, clinging smear as she kissed him. Unbelievable. She had kissed him. Breathing into his eyes and nose, she said,
"I'll walk you down, okay?"
Coming out of the kitchen with her, he said to Rachel and Jim Briskin, "We're going down to the corner. We'll be right back." "What for?" Jim Briskin said. Not to him, but to Pat.
"None of your business," Pat said.
Stopping by him, she kissed him, too. She seemed gay now. "Put on your shoes," Jim Briskin said. Supporting herself with her hand pressed to the wall, she bent her leg, lifting her foot behind her, and slipped on her high-heeled shoe. As she did the same with the other, she said,
"I want you to realize I'm paying for this."
"I hope so," Jim Briskin said. "And you'll pay for it a couple times again tomorrow morning. Who's going to feed you tomato juice?"
"Come on," Pat said to Art. "Where's my coat?"
Finding it for her, he started to hand it to her. Both Rachel and Jim Briskin were watching. Should he hold it up and help her into it? While he was floundering, she took the coat from him and opened the door that led out.
"Goodbye," she said. "We'll be right back."
To his wife, Art said, "See you in a minute." Rachel said,
"You might get some potato chips and maybe some of those cheese things."
"I will," he said, and he closed the door after himself and Pat. "Be careful," he said to her. All at once they were in complete darkness. He wanted to take her arm, but he was afraid. He did not understand what was happening. He could not believe it, and so he merely walked beside her up the steps to the cement path. "It's sure dark," he said. "It's funny. I saw you at the station, but I never said nothing to you. A lot of times we used to come up in a group. Around 4 p.m, we always listened to Club 17. We came to talk to Jim Briskin. I guess he isn't on it now. What is he, off for a while?" The woman beside him was silent. At the gate, she stopped to let him push it aside for her. The gate groaned. She went on ahead of him. In the night wind, her hair blew, long and untied. Such hair, he thought, as he had never touched. She walked much more slowly than Rachel, but he thought, as she had said, that she had had a lot to drink. Now on the sidewalk, she wrapped herself in her coat and seemed unaware of him. She gazed at the signs of stores, at the bars and the doorways. "It's cold," he said, "for July. It's the fog." The air was heavy with fog. Around each streetlight was a ring of misty yellow. Traffic sounds had receded and the footsteps of other persons were muffled, remote. The shapes that passed by were indistinct.
"Do you want the baby?" Pat said.
"Yes, sure."
"A baby will hold you and her together. You're not a family without children. You're just a couple. Do they all tell you not to have a baby? I wish we could have had children. Maybe we'd still be married."
"Were you married?"
"Jim and I," she said.
"Oh," he said, taken by surprise.
"How long did you know her before you got married? If I told you how I met Jim, you wouldn't believe it. We went up the coast and we got crocked, and we went to bed together, and that was it. We were up there on the Russian River for a week. 6 days, drinking and going to bed. Walking around Guerneville barefoot. Going swimming. Have you ever been up there?"
He was able to say, "Sure, a couple of times. We used to drive up Friday night, a bunch of us, and stay for the weekend."
"Did you go up there with Rachel?"
"No," he said. "But we went to Reno once."
"Do you like to go out?"
"Sure," he said. "We used to go bowling a lot. And over to Dodo's. And she likes to play poker. And dancing. She's a cool dancer. And a lot of times we used to go to record shops and stock car races. We drove down to Pebble Beach one time for the races. When we had a car, we drove around. It broke down and we sold it."
"So you don't have a car?"
"No. I tried to get my brother Nat, who runs this used car lot on Van Ness, to lend me one, but he won't."
Pat said, "Did you go around with other girls before you met her?"
"No," he said.
"Then she's really your girl, like in the movies. The girl you grew up with. The one woman for you."
Her hands in the pockets of her coat, she said,
"You think there's one girl for every boy? You believe that?"
"I don't know," he said.
"That's what they say."
"Maybe so," he said uncertainly. Reaching out, she ruffled his hair.
"Do you know you're cute? You're so young, and you have your one girl. I'll bet you still know kids you hang around with."
"I guess so," he said. The liquor store was to their right, and Pat entered it.
"Give me back my money,"
she said to him as they stopped at the front counter. "What'll it be?" the clerk, a middle-aged bald man, said. He smiled a pale, false-teeth smile.
"A fifth of Hiram Walker's," Pat said.
She took the dollar bills from Art and paid for the liquor. "Good night, folks," the clerk said as they left the store. The cash register jangled.
"What are you going to be,"
Pat said as they walked back,
"when you're old and broken down like Jim and me?"
"A printer," he said.
"Hey, when we get back, you want to see the dummies for our science fiction mag? It's called Phantasmagoria. Freda Heinke's president of the fan club. It's called The Beings from Earth."
She laughed.
"My lord.
It's multi-list. We've got pictures of fans and some drawings. If you can draw, maybe you could draw for the mag. You know?" It seemed a luminous hope. He exploited it for all it was worth. "What do you say?" Pat said,
I'm no good. I can't really draw. I took a couple of art courses in college.
Her voice was empty.
Don't look to me for anything, Art. Look what I did to Jim. I can't give. All I wanted to do was take. It was my fault. I know it, but I still can't give him anything. Even when I try, I can't. The other night I wanted to.
She broke off.
Have you ever had a woman hold out on you, Art?
They're supposed to do that. One kind, anyhow.
I never thought of myself as that kind. I just couldn't do it. Maybe I was still resentful. I was punishing him. Or maybe I've lost the capacity to give anything to anyone.
I never gave anything to Bob Posen. I told Jim I did. But it was just to hurt him. She stopped walking.
That's my car, she said. What do you think of it?
Going to the curb, he identified it as a new Dodge.
Not bad, he said. Too much chrome, but not a bad power plant. Can you drive?
Yeah, he said. Reaching into her coat, she brought out car keys.
Here, open the door.
Dumbfounded, he opened the car door. Pat motioned him in, and he crept in behind the wheel.
Where do you go, she said, when you take a girl for a drive?
Twin Peaks, he said. I guess. He was beginning to tremble. She slammed the door on her side.
Take me up there. Do you mind? I can't go back. He's waiting for me, and I can't. Honest to God, I want to, but I can't.
On the descending mountain side, cars were parked, most of them off the road or against the railing. In the cars, shapes stirred slowly, in cumbersome positions. Below the road, the pattern of lights flickered on the streets and houses of San Francisco. A field of lights as far as the eye could see. Fog drifted between the lights, and here and there the lights faded out. There was no sound except from the distant motors of cars.
Here? Art said. Okay?
He took the car off the road, onto a dirt shoulder. Tree branches scraped the hood. He shut off the headlights.
Turn the motor off, Pat said.
He did so. Beside him, she opened her purse and brought out a pack of cigarettes. He found matches and lit one for her. The match shook, and she steadied his hand.
What's the matter? She said.
Nothing? Blowing smoke from her nostrils, she said,
It's peaceful up here. I haven't been up here in 10 years. Not since I was your age. You know where I grew up? Near Stinson Beach.
That's cool up there, he said.
We used to go swimming every few days. Do you like to swim?
Sure, he said.
Are you good?
She handed him the package containing the bottle.
Maybe you can open it. There's a corkscrew in the dashboard.
He managed to get the bottle open.
I shouldn't do this, Pat said, taking the bottle. I know I shouldn't, but I have to do something. I can't go on this way. You think he'll forgive me?
Rummaging in the glove compartment, she came up with a plastic handless cup.
God, she said. It's still got Band-Aids in it.
She tossed the cup back in the glove compartment.
I don't want to drink. Here.
She handed the bottle back to him.
Put it away or drink it or something. You know what I came up here for?
What? He muttered.
I'm looking for something. I'm 27, Art. I'm 10 years older than you. Do you realize that? When I was your age, you were 7. You were in the first grade.
She sat smoking, her legs crossed. In the dull light entering the car, her legs sparkled. He made out the line of her ankle, her heel. You're sure nice looking, he heard his voice say.
Thank you, Art.
I mean it, he said.
Let's go, she said. Let's get out of here. I don't want to stay here.
Obedient, crushed with disappointment, he started up the engine. As he shifted into reverse, Pat reached out her hand and turned the ignition key. The engine died.
You actually would, she said. You're so... What is it? Let it go.
She put out her cigarette and lit another with a shiny metal lighter.
You'd drive me back if I asked you to. You wouldn't put up a fight. You wouldn't argue with me. Do you really like me, Art?
Yeah, he said fervently.
What about your wife?
For that, He had no answer. "You're going to be a father. Do you realize that, Art? You're going to have a little boy. Have you thought what name you want to call him?"
"No," he said. "Not yet."
"How will you feel?"
She was staring out at the lights below them.
"You're a 17-year-old boy, and you're going to be a father."
"Right," he said.
18, he said. "The world's so goddamn peculiar."
She turned on the car seat, facing him. She had drawn up her legs and tucked them under her. In the light, her cheekbones were radiant, and he traced in his mind the line of her forehead, the ridge of her eyebrow, and then her nose. She had thin lips. In the half-light, her lips were black. Her chin and neck were in shadow.
"Come on, Art," she said.
"Come on what?" he said, afraid of her.
"Before I change my mind."
Rolling down the window, she tossed her cigarette out. It fell into the darkness.
"I feel so awful. This is a terrible thing to do. It isn't fair to you or your wife or Jim or any of us. It's so mixed up, but what else is there, Art? I've been going around and around. I don't know. I really don't know."
Her fingers reached up and touched his face. Moving toward him, she brought her lips close to him. He felt the pressure of her mouth, the hard, sharp pressure of her teeth as she kissed him. Her breath smelled of flowers and cinnamon. As he put his arms around her, he heard the rustle of her clothes and the faint giving of muscles and ligaments and joints, the stirrings of her body. Her sleeve brushed his eyes. She was clinging to him, resting her head against his neck. How heavy her head was. She lay on him, breathing shallowly. Panting, he thought. Not moving, but content to lie against him with her eyes shut, her arm up so that her fingers curled into his hair. She was discouraged and lonely, and he knew what she wanted. She wanted to lie close to him, turning her face up to be kissed. He held her face between his hands and lifted her. At once she let her lips slacken so that he could find her mouth. She was back into the past, living out her own young days. She was with him in the romance and excitement of a first date, wrapped up in his arms on the front seat of a car, parked at the side of the road above the lights of the city, overlooking the darkness, the night, and fog. In other cars, other boys held their girls and petted them and kissed them. He ran his hands along the fabric of her blouse, along her shoulders and arms. He avoided her breasts because that was not what she wanted. Holding his mouth against hers, he poured out of him and into her the love she wanted. He lost nothing, and yet he felt her fill out and become powerful with it. She had to take it from him, but he had it to give her. "I love you," he said. She sighed. She said nothing. Her face lay pressed to his shoulder. Time passed, and she did not stir, and at last he realized that she had fallen asleep. Gently, he lifted her back until she rested against the door. Then he covered her with her coat. Starting up the engine, he drove down the hill, back into town. As they drove among the lights of Van Ness Avenue, she stirred a little, sat up, and then said,
"Do you know where I live?"
"No," he said. "But we're not going there. We're going back to Fillmore."
"Take me home," she said. "You can call your wife from my place. Please?"
He had been wrong. "Tell me where," he said. He felt leaden, but he did as she said. He could not back out. Beside him, she was opening her purse to get out her cigarettes. Neither of them spoke, and then she said,
"Turn right here."
He turned the car.
"What are you going to tell her?" she said.
"I don't know. I'll tell her something. I ran into these guys. Grimmelman, maybe."
"You've never done anything like this before, have you?"
"No," he said.
"Do you want to?"
"You don't have to. I won't make you do it." "I want to," he said. And he did want to. "You're really cute," he said. "You're really pretty."
"Thank you, Art," she said. "I know you mean it. You wouldn't say so if you didn't."
She seemed calm at this point.